You're listening to the NI Business News podcast with me, Simon Ross. For more information, go to bbc.co.uk/podcasts.
Simon's back with more business. It's the economics of the World Cup, Simon. Or something like that.
Something like that. It's getting to the business end of the Football World Cup, so I thought it only fitting that the business slot this morning should focus on the tournament, no matter how tenuous the link. No. For many fans, though, the World Cup is the only time they get to see teams from far-flung countries actually playing football. But in the business world, if you look hard enough, you can find a Northern Ireland-based company that's doing business in or with almost every country represented in Brazil. Richard Ramsey, the Ulster Bank's chief economist, has been crunching the numbers and, for a bit of fun, worked out who would have qualified from the group stages based purely on how much they trade with Northern Ireland. Richard joins me in the studio now. Good morning.
Good morning.
So Richard, based on exports, imports to Northern Ireland, who would have been the big winners?
Well, England would have actually lifted the trade World Cup, as it were, if we were looking at the simply in terms of the volume of trade with us in Northern Ireland.
The only way it was ever going to win.
Well, some would say yes. And after that, it would be the US would be the other finalists in the World Trade Cup. And then after that, you would be looking at, the other big economies would be Germany, France, and then the Netherlands.
So some of those kind of bigger countries that we obviously would do a bit of trade with, but there are a lot of countries there that would surprise some people that firms in Northern Ireland are actually doing business with.
Absolutely, in terms of some of the countries, when you look at the likes of the Ivory Coast, Chile, Uruguay, Ghana, Cameroon, Nigeria, there's all firms in Northern Ireland are actually exporting or importing from those countries, so they all feature in this too.
So what sort of levels are we talking about there? I mean, what are we doing with the Ivory Coast, for example?
Well, it is comparatively small. If you look at the Ivory Coast in terms of, it was just over £18 million worth of exports in terms of goods last year, whereas go to the likes of Nigeria, you're looking at £43 million. So that is small numbers by comparison to the likes of what we export to the US or our European countries.
And of course, with the World Cup countries, it's not an exhaustive list. Republic of Ireland, who would be our big trade partner, not represented. And the likes of China, which I suppose most firms want to do business with, are not on there.
Indeed. And in terms of China, we actually trade more with China than we do with the US, but it's the balance of trade is different. Because in terms of when we look at the US, we actually export more than we import, whereas with China, we import much more than we export. And if you look at for every £1 worth of exports, we actually import £8 worth of goods from China.
That's quite a surprising number in some ways, but probably not when you think of how much is made in China. On balance, of these quarterfinalists, maybe the countries that have gone through, are we exporting or importing more to them?
Well, if we look at the quarterfinalists, it's actually France is the only country left in the World Cup where we actually export more than we import from. So what we'd want to see is that actually the other way around. But when you look at the likes of Germany, I don't think there's maybe any countries anywhere who actually export more to Germany than they import.
I just finally fitting maybe with July 4th tomorrow that perhaps it's the US who come out on top of this World Cup in many ways.
Yes, in terms of if you actually look at in terms of the US, how valuable it is to the Northern Ireland economy in terms of trade, investment, and also in terms of tourism, its significance is probably underestimated, and we'll probably be seeing more of that in the press in the coming days.
10 minutes to 7. Simon's here with the business news. Morning, Simon.
Good morning.
Details of how much local banks are lending to homes and businesses. Good or bad news?
Well,
depends where you stand, I suppose.
It does really, whether you're a bank or a borrower. I mean, it's been that big unwinnable argument over the last few years. People saying banks aren't lending, the banks saying yes we are, but not providing figures to prove it. Now, for the first time, the British Bankers Association has released some detailed figures from the banks here. The figures show that in both the third and fourth quarters of last year, net borrowing by households and businesses was down slightly. But amongst a raft of numbers, the encouraging one for small businesses was that new lending to small and medium-sized firms was up by over 40% in the second half of last year. Now, obviously, that's coming back from a low level through the recession. But the value of new loans to businesses here was £362 million, with the BBA saying 9 out of 10 loans in that period were actually approved. Now, business organisations, as you might expect, have welcomed that there's a bit of transparency at last. But the Deputy Governor of the Bank of England, John Cunliffe, was talking on that subject this morning. And his view is that while things are improving, there still needs to be a lot better access to finance to small firms to sustain that recovery.
Lending as a whole to the economy and lending to business has been coming back strongly, but no, lending to small businesses from banks is still weak. And I think this is a problem that we've had in the economy since the recession. It's got better, but I don't think it's got to the point where you'd say that small businesses have the access to the money they need, the credit they need to operate at the moment. I think we have to look at what banks are doing. It's quite important we look also at other ways in which small businesses can finance themselves for two reasons. One, because it may be possible that other players can come into this market, and there's some evidence that that's happening. But also, if we have a bit more diversity in the system, we have more channels, more ways in which money can go to small businesses, then I think we'll just be a bit more, I'll come back to that word, resilient if we hit a crisis in the future.
And TransLink has released its annual results. How's that fared?
Well, again, yes, absolutely. No. Well, again, it depends where you stand. TransLink has posted a small pre-tax profit of about £300,000 in its 2013-14 financial year, and that was down from about £9 million the year before. Now, the bus and rail company put the difference down to a number of one-off items boosting its numbers last year, such as sell-offs of land. But on the positive side, it said it carried almost 1 million more passengers in the year, taking the total to 79.5 million people, with rail passengers actually up the most. Now, TransLink's fares have been frozen this year, and I guess all eyes will be on whether it's allowed to increase those fares in 2015, with a decision on that likely to be taken later on in the year. Thanks for listening to today's podcast. Don't forget, you can subscribe online if you'd like to get the podcast delivered to your phone or desktop every morning.